my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
That we can, and so help us God, we will make America great again.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the No Gimmicks Podcast. I'm your humble host, as always, Brady Leonard. Hopefully you guys had a terrific weekend. A great show for you today. I was joined by my brother, Ian Haworth. Always a great time talking to Ian. And we had a lot to discuss after my week off last week. We talked about Kristi Noem bragging about killing dogs for clout. That's a weird one. We talked about it will make absolutely no difference who Donald Trump selects as his running mate this time around. And we talked about the pro-Hamas protesters on college campuses screaming death to America and a bunch of other charming phrases like that. A lot to discuss, as always. Before I get to Ian, guys, if you haven't already, please follow us on Twitter at NoGimmicksPod. Please subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe. If you are an Apple user, please take a couple seconds to leave us a 5-star rating and a good review. I'd really appreciate that. And if you like the show and want to get involved, you can support us monthly over on Patreon, patreon.com/TheNoGimmicksPodcast. All right, without further ado, the great Ian Haworth. All right, guys, we're here with my brother Ian Haworth. Ian, how you been, man?
Brady, I've been great. The weeks post marriage have been slowly getting back to normal. I feel fully like myself again, back to work and all of that stuff. How's life been with you?
It's been great, brother, and congratulations publicly for the first
time. Thank you.
For getting married. Proud of you, my man. Weddings are stressful. I'm sure there's part of you that's just happy to move on past it. I know that's how I felt.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because, you know, my wife is amazing at organizing everything. So the weeks leading up to the wedding weren't stressful at all. But then everything went wrong sort of the week of the wedding. So we got married in the mountains in California, had beautiful weather for weeks before, weeks after. The day before and the day of the wedding were historic snowstorms. Like, we woke up to 10 inches of snow the day of the wedding. Everyone was telling us, oh, I can't believe it. This never happens. It's like, you can imagine how I respond to that. So, yeah, cool. That helps. So then vendors were late or couldn't get there. People couldn't get there because of the weather. It was all a bit of a shit show, but it all came together. You know, the ceremony was beautiful, and that's really, really the only part that matters. So it happened. It's like over in a blink of an eye. Everything people say about weddings is true, and that way, like, you don't really remember it. I feel like to some extent you enjoy it, but you don't have the wherewithal to fully enjoy it and take it all in because it is such a blur. Very surreal experience.
Oh yeah, man. I was so stressed at my wedding. I don't remember it at all. So when people ask me about it, I'm like, well, I ended up married. So,
yep.
You know, it couldn't have been that bad.
She didn't change your mind halfway through.
Yeah. Worked out. Yeah, man. Well, that's awesome, dude. Marriage is
great.
Thank
you.
Man, I was on vacation all last week, and before that, I was off for unforeseen circumstances as well. So it's been a minute. I've still been writing, but I missed a lot of podcasts. And I was off grid last week, and I logged back on this weekend, and Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, is murdering puppies. And before we jump into it, I swear, man, anytime like the weirdest stuff pops up when I'm out, like anytime I'm on vacation or a fishing trip or I'm out hunting for a week or whatever, like you could give me a million guesses as to what the news cycle is going to be when I come back, and I would never get it right in a million years. Like, it's just absolute Mad Libs, man. It is wild out there.
Yep.
So I definitely did not see that one come.
I mean, where do you even start with this? I mean, there's so many layers. I mean, first, the fact that, you know, she did this is kind of a problem because you speak to anyone in the world of country. Like, my wife's family are all in agriculture. I speak to people who own ranches or farmers all the time. The idea that you would do this to a dog is kind of upsetting. But then the fact you would boast about it in a book and then keep doubling down. I mean, I don't know if everyone who's listening has heard this, but there's the Rolling Stone article I posted. Would you mind if I just read from it for a second so everyone's kind of caught up on the language she used?
Oh, by all means.
So she said, I hated that dog. She's talking about a dog called Cricket. And then she called it less than worthless as a hunting dog, untrainable, and dangerous to anyone she came into contact with. And then at that moment, she realized she had to put her down. And Noem dragged Cricket to a gravel pit and shot her dead in front of a startled construction crew. And here's a quote. It was not a pleasant job, but it had to be done. And after it was over, I realized another unpleasant job needs to be done. And then she proceeds to talk about killing a, quote, disgusting, musky, rancid goat who sometimes chased her children and messed up their clothes. Have you ever met a goat? They are all like this.
Yes.
It's wild. So that's what everyone is talking about when you talk about Christy Noem murdering puppies. Yeah, well, she's literally out there murdering puppies. It's like a 14-month-old dog, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to unpack here. It's just all so fake and gay, man. It's just like, okay, this is just a super weird, somehow even worse and more cringe, less racist, but more cringe, Hillary Clinton, I carry hot sauce in my purse, you stupid blacks comment. And so Christy Noem comes up with, I'm such a Republican farmer that I brag about shooting puppies, you stupid white people. Yep. And it's like, unfortunately, for like you mentioned, I mean, you haven't even lived in America for all that long, and you know a whole bunch of farmers and ranchers, and you married into a family of farmers. A lot of Americans know farmers. A lot of Americans know ranchers, and Americans know that farmers don't just shoot their dogs willy-nilly, at least since the end of the Great Depression in the early 1940s. And I personally don't own a dog, but I know a lot of hunters with bird dogs. Noem and her family, they hunt pheasants. Everybody hunts pheasants out there in the Dakotas. And when your bird dog sucks, your bird dog becomes a yard dog. You know what I mean? Not a dead dog. Yeah. Okay, this isn't... It's like she just... She's trying to sound cool, so she's pretending it's like 1790 on the frontier and you need to shoot your dog because you're all starving to death. You know what I mean? It's just like, guys, the fact that she's so ridiculous and small-minded that she would think this would like help her like Republican credibility or something, it's so embarrassing, man.
Yeah, it's just all cosplaying, isn't it? Both sides, they're all... Politicians on both sides are really the same. It's just they're trying to play a different part. So they'll, you know, throw on the orange outfit and go blast a bird in the face that was placed there for them and then go, yeah. Oh, look, I'm such a hunter.
Or shoot another guy in the face like Dick Cheney.
Why not? It was an accident. It was an accident, Brady. Those things happen when you're out hunting in the middle of the woods.
The other guy apologized to him. That is power. That is power, my friend.
I'm sorry for putting my face in the way of your gun. Oh, it's unbelievable. But there's also the problem I find here is it's not just Christy Noem. It's like the infrastructure of grifters and hacks and liars, because it's all the same group of people all acting the same part. I mean, the funniest part about all of this is honestly the endorsements of the book. So one is Riley Gaines, who for some reason is one of these untouchable conservative celebrities who everyone thinks is a genius. I mean, I think the stuff she's done in the world of transgenderism and sport is obviously fantastic. Fully support her there. But the way people then assume she's like a political genius and knows anything about anything other than swimming and whether men should be swimming against women is kind of laughable. But I'm going to read you her endorsement of the book, Brady. So this is also something Christy Noem was pushing 4 days ago. So it's, you know, not like it's anything old. So Christy Noem isn't afraid to challenge the status quo. And neither
did you all say.
Yeah. This book is the perfect blueprint for young Americans
on
how to move our nation forward and restore greatness in our country. The time is now. So Riley Gaines read the book and loves murdering puppies, or Riley Gaines never read the book and is willing to presumably take money to give endorsements for a book she's never read. Everything is a scam, Brady. Everything.
Christy Noem is not afraid to kill her dog. It's the perfect example of killing dogs. The time is now to kill a dog. I mean, in Riley Gaines' defense, obviously she was paid to tweet that, and it was probably in the drafts for weeks and scheduled and stuff like that. So I kind of feel bad for anybody who had to come out with the endorsement of this book.
This was like an official endorsement for the book. There's a graphic out there. Like her picture with the book on front of it and all that stuff. I mean, obviously you and I don't have anywhere near as big a following as Riley Gaines for a variety of reasons. A part of it is that we're not willing to put on bikinis to sell beer. Not yet. I mean, the times could get tricky, Brady. I know you're willing to do anything if you
in this economy.
I can't wait for that calendar. It's just the fact that you are willing to put your if you're in the world of saying what you think. There's a big debate going on right now about what a grifter is. A grifter is someone who's willing to say and do quite literally anything, even if it contradicts what they said yesterday. And this is the problem, I think, with people like Riley Gaines, is that it's not that they have views and that they don't serve some use, but it's they're willing just to put their name and their face on anything that makes them money. And there is no integrity. We should all hope in the world of commentary and where ideas are the currency that you actually have some ideas. Most of these people don't. Christy Noem, Riley Gaines, all of these people, they're all the same in a variety of ways. Is that they're just willing to do what it takes to make money in the moment. And they're giving people what they think they want, even if it contradicts yesterday.
In their defense, they have a lot more money than you and I do. So, like, I do get it. And, like, that's why you and I aren't, like, it is way easier to build a following as a complete hack.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because I agonize over when I get something wrong, it ruins my day.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I really put a lot of time and effort into making sure I know what I'm talking about. And it tears me up, man. Because I fuck things up just like everyone else. We all do. There's no way. I mean, we write, how much content do guys like you and I put out every year?
Not to.
I mean, you are just going to screw stuff up. And that's why, like, you've done my year in review show a couple times, I think. And, you know, like, the biggest things, like, what's the thing you fucked up the worst, you know? And just to air it, man, just get it out there. You know, let the audience make fun of you. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, I think, in my opinion. And it's just funny, man, with going back to the Christy Noem book. As of yesterday, she's on day three of putting out statements excusing her dog killing. And you know what Ronald Reagan said? If you're explaining, you're losing. And if you're on day three of explaining puppy murder, you're definitely losing. I mean, it's amazing. It's like it's like the South Dakota version of like Kamala Harris. You know what I mean? Like Harris would be like the only other person who I could see like writing something like that in a book. Not that these people write their own books. It's obviously ghostwritten, but it's like in terms of like the complete lack of political acumen, I think Kamala Harris is the only one who would equal this.
Yes.
This gaffe by Christy Noem.
Yes. I'm amazed that Kamala Harris is still part of the platform for the Democrats.
Black.
I mean,
she's kind of black. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She's borderline black.
If she was like 100% black.
It's just nuts.
I mean, they wouldn't even. They'd arrest you for saying that. Goodness.
You get arrested for anything these days, Brady. Luckily, I live in a free state, so I can kind of get away with saying things. But don't go to New York ever again.
No, I won't. It's just, man, and one more thing on Christy Noem, and I promise the audience will move on. It's just funny to me. Like, it's hard to become governor, man. You can't become a governor if you're a complete talentless moron. It's extremely mm-hmm. difficult. There's only 50 states, only 50 of those chairs. But this woman wants to be Donald Trump's running mate so badly that she employs a strategy to try to sound cool by bragging about killing her dog. I mean, it's just like example 1,000 of the people who want power the most are the people who should be kept from it at all costs. It's like the absolute thirstiness of this woman. And like the thing that bothers me, and I really don't like talking about stuff like this, topics like this on the podcast, because I just don't like talking about people's, you know, families and stuff. But like, we do know she at least was, maybe still is, cheating on her husband with Trump's former disgraced campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski. And she still wants to be vice president and apparently president after that. I'm sure that's the only reason why anybody would ever want to be vice president. So she's apparently just fine with putting her family through either 6 months or 4 years in 6 months of the press talking about literally nothing else besides her killing dogs and cheating on her family. Like, she's willing to put her kids, her grandkids, her husband through that, which is sociopathic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like, don't cheat on your husband, but if you do, maybe don't run for office again.
Yep.
So you're not literally torturing your family through the press every single day. So just like, these people want power so badly, you see the look in their eye, man, and it's just like, it's creepy. If you and I had a buddy like that just desired power above all, like, we'd probably excommunicate him. Like, we just wouldn't want to be friends with that person. It's kind of disturbing, especially when she's willing to throw her family under the bus like that. And it's just like, it's an example, you know, 9,000 of that these people are the absolute worst, and I'm totally right about anarchy.
Yeah, the.
So I wanted to sneak that in at the end there.
I know, that's very sneaky, because I was all had the agreement ready and loaded, and then you just sneak in like, oh, and I hate the Jews. It's like, yeah, you know what? You're right, Brady. But I think you're totally right. I think power and money and fame, they're all in the same bubble of this thing that really sociopathic people crave. And especially working in this space, you and I have met multiple people who are clearly just motivated by one thing, and that's more power, more money, more fame. I mean, I came into doing this never really motivated by money or fame or any of that, just wanting to make a difference and say what I thought. And maybe that's a downside in a way, because you see a lot of the people who quote unquote are successful, if you measure the metric by just number of followers or the amount of money you can make in a year, that kind of thing. It's pretty clear that the commentary class and the political class, it's all the same thing. It's all just trying to become a celebrity one way or another. It doesn't really matter what you do or what you achieve or what minds you change. It's just all about yourself. And it's, you know, those people when you meet them, and they're pretty scary people, because I think if you're a moral person, if you're truly a religious person, for example, there are the things you are unwilling to do. You are unwilling to sacrifice various principles in favor of just getting one letter, one level up that ladder. And then that you meet these people who are willing to do anything. They would push their own grandmother down the stairs if it got them 10,000 extra Twitter followers. It's shocking, but those people are out there. And unfortunately, we've built a world in which we reward those people. They're not just out there. They're running the show. Yeah. And it's pretty dangerous stuff.
Yeah. This morning, the press is, we didn't have a primary the way we were supposed to. You know what I mean? So the press needs to talk about something. They really don't want to talk about, like, the pro-Hamas riots on campuses and stuff like that. So they have to talk about something. So now all the corporate journalists are reporting that Doug Burgum, the governor of North Dakota, is now likely to be Trump's VP pick, since people don't like Kristi Noem anymore because of the dog business. And a couple of things here. First, just a side note, I don't really see Trump picking someone like normal. Like, Burgum would probably be a good pick. He's like a normal person without like a bunch of crazy baggage. But I just have a feeling he's going to pick somebody dumber. You know what I mean? But like, here's the deal. Here's the main point. I understand journalists don't know what to do with themselves right now. Biden's a mess. The left is screaming death to America on TV every day. So they can't talk about that. They need something to talk about. And they can't obsess about the primary the way they thought they'd be able to. But it literally does not matter. It does not, like, I guarantee you, not a single vote will change based on Trump's VP pick. Like, nothing. Like, nobody. Like, the establishment Republicans will still vote for him if he picks Tucker Carlson or Carrie Lake or Matt Gaetz or any of these people. Like, Mitch McConnell came out and endorsed Trump yesterday. Said, yeah, I'll vote for him no matter what. That's what all these, they'll vote for him. And then the MAGA people will bend over and take it if it's Nikki Haley. Okay, they will. They'll say they won't, but they absolutely will. You and I, they know it. I know it. They know we know it. We know they know we know it. They will do it. If Trump picked John Bolton, who he already hired before, remember, when he was president of the United States, I'm old enough to remember, he hired John Bolton. If he picks John Bolton as his vice president, MAGA will twist themselves into pretzels to excuse it. One way or the other, whether it's like a neoconservative, whether it's like a populist, it does not matter. It truly doesn't. Like, the only thing that matters in this election is, can Trump keep the focus on Biden or not? Because the economy's terrible, foreign policy not going well, inflation is through the roof. The focus has been on Joe Biden, and that's why Trump is up in the polls. Now, can he keep his mouth shut? Can he keep the focus on Biden? I don't know. That's an open question, but that's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're still talking about Joe Biden, Trump wins. If we're talking about Trump in November, Joe Biden wins. Kristi Noem or Doug Burgum or, like, I get that there's going to be this whole VP sweepstakes thing over the next couple months, but dude, like, I'm going to get it all out of the way right now and never talk about it again, because I promise you, not a single vote will change one way or the other.
Yeah, it's just, the thing is with Trump and Biden is they are the key to the show. And the people who hate Trump, they don't really hate anyone else as much as Trump. And so there's no one out there who's really hanging on, waiting to see who the VP pick is to think, oh, well, that'll actually change my mind about Trump. Because Mike Pence was Trump's VP. You know, Mike Pence is basically the opposite of Trump in every single possible way. And it didn't really make any difference to how people view Trump. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. And a lot of this is just the vacuum of attention that the primary race was supposed to give us. And so now people are just looking for, like, the next level down in the league, like the, you know, like the arena football, because they're bored with the NFL kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, as you said, completely meaningless. I think it'll tell us a lot about how Trump is approaching this. Hopefully he'll pick the most unassuming, boring, vanilla person out there so that as much attention can be given to Biden as possible. If it's someone like, you know, Carrie Lake, Laura Loomer, Jen Ellis, that kind of intellectual crowd, I think that's going to say a bit more about what he wants out of this race, which is more attention on him. Because as you said, this is all about who can make it about the other person. That's why Trump won in 2016. That's why he lost in 2020. It's because all this is I'm not as bad as the other guy.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately what these elections have become.
And it's not just a Trump phenomenon. I mean, like, if, like, everybody knows Kamala Harris is terrible, like, she has a much lower approval rating than Trump or Biden. But, like, if Trump replaced her with, like, I don't know, like a more competent, articulate Democrat who Democrats liked, I don't know. Who would that be?
That's a tough one.
Articulate Democrat. There's got to be, you know, there's a couple of them.
Struggling like, right now, really.
I'm going through the list of governors in my head, brother. It's pretty.
Let's say Gavin Newsom.
Gosh, but he's so creepy looking.
Yeah, but he's at least competent in a terrible way.
I guess. Yeah, I mean, his policy proposals achieve their goals, you know? So if you're like a demon, you're probably happy with that. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, but anyway, you're right. If you replaced Harris with Gavin Newsom, it would not help Biden. Because it's still just like, can Trump force the country to focus on Joe Biden's job performance? Can Joe Biden force the country to focus on Donald Trump's big fat orangeness and weird people around him and stuff like that? You know what I mean? Or whatever. So it's just like, it's just, man, there's so few, like, there's going to be an October surprise. There's going to be things that shift the race in one direction or the other, probably back and forth several times over the next several months.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all stuff that, like we know, like, besides death, right? Like, they're both in their 80s. Like, God forbid, one of them could drop dead. That changes everything. But aside from that, dude, like, the script is written, man. It's like, it's all, and we've seen it before. We've done it before. We kind of know what's going to happen.
I also think the same things they're trying to repeat just don't have the same weight. So, for example, the 2020 versus 2024, you know, the riots are starting around the same time, you know, all the protests, all the stupid shut-ins. But the thing people are debating about is far less contentious in terms of the average American. So in 2020, people were talking about racial issues, which there is at least some debate to be had still in the United States. There are still racial issues. There are still debates over so-called racial justice, blah, blah, blah. But now we have literal terrorists sitting there with Hamas headbands screaming death to America. That's not going to bring the moderate over to your side in the way that some BLM stuff did. Whether or not you agree with it, I think the vast majority of BLM was just communist propaganda, but it was far smarter and far more subtle. Now we have people who hate America burning American flags in the street, screaming for Islamic rule. That's not going to have the same effect, I hope, please God.
Yeah.
But people have seen this, but it's like a worse sequel. And I think people are bored of it already. So I don't know. I think things are going to get a lot worse because Democrats are desperate to win. And I don't know. I'm still very pessimistic about the hopes of the Republican Party just because, one, I think they're incompetent and they don't do what is necessary to win. But two, the Democrats have control of every single institution. And when you're seeing the polls and it's really only a matter of a few percentage points that are putting Trump ahead in every single state he needs to win for us to have a hope of winning. And then you put in the media, who you and I have been talking about it for years, give that 5, 10, 15% of the polls. We don't have a lot of leeway. And so it's, I don't know. I just don't know how to feel it anymore. Sometimes I think it almost gets too much and then it becomes, you're just numb to it because we've lived this for 4 years now, the Trump versus Biden nonsense.
Yeah.
Nothing is new. Nothing is unchanged. I think that's why you're right when you say this is one of the most unimportant elections, because we know exactly what's going to happen either way.
Yeah.
There's no mystery.
Yeah, I'm more worried about, it's going to be really tough down ballot for Republicans because Republicans just are not going to have the same kind of money. I mean, Democrats always outspend Republicans drastically, mm-hmm. but it's going to be much worse because all this money, the GOP has no money, and the money they're raising is going to Trump's legal bills. So it's like a lot of these candidates down ballot are going to get starved out.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, man, the thought of like a President Trump with a Democrat House and Senate is terrifying. It might even be a little bit worse than Biden, not necessarily like foreign policy, because the president has so much power on foreign policy, but on legislation, Trump will just kind of give Democrats whatever they want, like he did when he was in office before. So it's just like, we're still going to get increasing inflation. We're still going to get economic calamity either way. I mean, obviously, Joe Biden has been uniquely bad on foreign policy, in my opinion. But yeah, it's just like you said, with going back to the Democrats going back to the well, it's like they just can't. Like, they are going to, you see it in their ads they're running. Like, it's all, like, January 6th mm-hmm. stuff. It's all, like, insurrection stuff. And it's just like, bro, how do you think, like, there's no way that works when Democrats are chasing Jews around and screaming death to America on college campuses.
Yep.
It's just, like, that's not, that is just, I mean, no, like, these people think, I don't know, like, these people have such a bizarre view of the world. Libertarians view this, you know, don't understand the way people think about foreign policy either. Americans are over the Middle Eastern wars, at least a lot of Americans are, especially younger Americans. But that doesn't, it's like Democrats have convinced themselves that that means that, like, Americans love Iran mm-hmm. or something, or like Americans would side with, like, literal terrorists over Israel or over America. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's such a bizarre, like, blame America for everything kind of thing. And I, yep. you know me, I'm literally an anarchist. I'm a non-interventionist. I think America's done a lot of evil things on the world stage, especially in the last 25 years. But it's not, like, what are we talking about? America's still the greatest country in the world. I'd still rather, I still believe in American values, as diluted as they are now in 2024, over Middle Eastern values. Like, what are we doing? Like, what yeah. are we, you know, radical Islamic values? Like, what are we doing? So it's just like the Democrats placating these people, and then they're going to go back to the Trump's insurrectionist thing when Jews are hiding in attics and college camp in dorm rooms. You know what I mean? It's like, my goodness, you people. Like, how do you think that's going to look to normal independent voters?
Yeah, I mean, also the mask is truly off with the anti-Semitism stuff. I think for a long time, the Ilhan Omar and the Rashida Tlaibs and the AOCs, they were able to tiptoe along that line that's been existed for decades of, oh, I'm not anti-Jew, I'm just anti-Israel, I'm anti-Zionist. And they got away with a lot because of that. You know, that allowed people like Barack Obama, John Kerry, Joe Biden just to send Iran billions of dollars, who openly called for the destruction of Israel, which is an American ally, whether you like it or not. But the fact that now you have people in the street chanting for the death of Jews, fuck the Jews, like, we're not talking about Israel anymore. We're talking about American citizens.
Yeah.
And that's what matters really to me. I think you can have opinions on Israel. I obviously care about Israel as a Jewish person, but I don't believe that should be America's role. I don't think even American resources should be sent towards necessarily the defense of Israel beyond what's already been done. I think Israel can defend itself perfectly well. The problem for me is, one, Joe Biden funding the people who want to kill all the Jews. But also just the attitude towards Jews generally in the West, especially when Judeo-Christian values are the fundamental basis of America. And so when you see what's going on right now, it is purely anti-American. Screaming yeah. for the death of anyone, let alone Jews, Christians, it's absolutely revolting. It's entirely antithetical to what this country is based on. I mean, you just think about Washington's letter to the Jewish congregation in Rhode Island, and to go from that, which is stunning in the 1700s, to yeah. write about the rights of Jews to exist in a country where at that point there are very few countries that they'd been allowed to exist, let alone as equal citizens.
Yeah.
And I still find that living today, living in America, walking around, I carry a firearm with me. And I know for a lot of Americans that's just normal. But as a Jewish person, thousands of years of history have banned us from even the idea of defending yourself. And we're seeing that coming out right now, of when people can call for ceasefire and also the destruction of Jews in the same sentence, is because people do not believe that Jews have a right to defend themselves. And in the United States, and to a different extent in Israel, the only places that Jews are allowed to defend themselves. America is a truly amazing country. If we talk about caring about minorities, caring about equal rights, it's really the only place that truly exists. And I hope to God that most people are waking up to the fact that this so-called pro-Palestinian nonsense is anti-West, anti-America, anti-Jewish, anti-Christianity. And I'm praying to God right now that they lose, because they have to lose.
Yeah, and they will. I mean, I'm encouraged that my fellow libertarians have woken up a little bit, at least most of them had, and they're not trying to make these literal terrorist-supporting communists their allies anymore because they claim to be anti-war. I mean, that was annoying for the last few months here. Because you saw this a mile away, man. I'm like, there's just no nuance in American mm-hmm. politics anymore, man. There's no critical thought. I mean, it's like libertarians especially fall for stuff like this all the time. You know, like they convince themselves that these like pro-Hamas protesters were just like principled Scott Horton anti-war activists. It's like, guys, they're holding Hamas flags.
Yeah.
They're chanting death to America. I mean, like, what do you, come on. Like, these people are not your allies. They hate, I mean, they don't know anything about Israel. They don't know anything about the Jews. They hate America. They hate Western civilization. They hate white people. And they throw in Israel and the Jews along with the West,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that, like, that's it. They hate you. They hate, trust me, they hate libertarianism more than they hate anything, man. Trust me. They don't want people to live free and express themselves the way they see fit. That's ridiculous. So it's like, I'm glad that, you know, normal people, thinking people are starting to distance themselves from this nonsense. But, mm-hmm. and I will tell you, coming back off the grid from last week, I was encouraged to see some college professors in handcuffs for any reason. By the way, I don't care if it was, you know, protesting on behalf of Hamas or what. You know, I'm not a big fan of the cops, but I'm way less of a fan of college professors, and in most cases, college students as well. So I will say it was a pleasant surprise after a week at the beach, to see these people being hauled off in chains.
This is also, I think, where I come to the debate over Twitter and whether or not it's better with Elon Musk. I think this is one example where it is immeasurably better, because during, for example, 2020, a lot of the BLM stuff, the media and through social media, they had complete control of the narrative. They had complete control of what reality was. Now the gloves are completely off. The mask is completely off. We know exactly what these people on college campuses, whether it be professors, students, activists, all these people, we know exactly what they're saying. So Ilhan Omar can come out and say, oh, these are just peaceful demonstrations that are anti-war. And then immediately on Twitter, you can now find videos that would have been banned in the past of professors, students, activists screaming for the death of Jews. It's just immediately debunked and people have access to the truth. I mean, there's obviously a lot of problems with things like social media, but that is just one thing now, that the power is truly in the hands of people who wish to seek out the truth.
Yeah.
And so, again, I think that's one reason why people aren't really being fooled in the same way they were before. Like, you cannot be a libertarian and actually believe these people are anti-war when they are calling for war against the West.
Right, right.
So I think people are waking up to the truth much quicker now, and so I'm definitely thankful to people like Elon Musk for just providing people with a platform to actually access this stuff. Because is there any other platform except for Rumble, perhaps, where you could access this? You wouldn't see these things. You wouldn't see what's actually going on college campuses. It would be the much more sanitized version of just these people who just, I want a two-state solution. I want peace in the Middle East. I'm just anti-genocide. It's like, well, no, you're pro-genocide. You just want the Jews to stop fighting back, is essentially what people want right now. So encouraged by that, and then also encouraged just by the number of people who are speaking quite openly about how they feel about what is going on. I think people are not afraid of being labeled racist anymore. The Islamophobia label doesn't carry anywhere near as much weight as it has in the past. And so I think people talking honestly about this issue is another positive here.
Yeah. And that is a good point about Twitter, too. I mean, I have a lot of problems with Elon Musk's Twitter. But, yeah, you're obviously 100% right. If this happened 5 years ago, it would have been, a lot of this stuff would have been suppressed. I mean, I bet 70% of the country thinks that Kyle Rittenhouse murdered black people.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Even though he killed two white pedophiles who were trying to kill him, and one of them actually shot at him first. But that was all suppressed by social media. You weren't allowed to say that. And so people think, I mean, you know, one, Kyle Rittenhouse should not be doing a speaking tour. He's not a political commentator or a good speaker or anything like that. You know, like, throw him with the Riley Gaines camp and all this. And you don't have to make everybody a political commentator, ladies and gentlemen. You really don't. But leave that to the professionals. But, you know, like, obviously, they think he did something horrible that he didn't do. You know what I mean? But yeah, you can't. I mean, now you see these videos of these Hamas supporters behaving like feral animals on your screen. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't deny it. I mean, like, the guy from Colombia who was just, like, expelled or whatever, and because he put up an hour-long video about how much he wants to kill Jews. And then he's like, oh, I was just misunderstood. I want to kill Jews, but I haven't yet. You know, and, hey, you know, it's like, no, you can't get away with that. Like, that would have been memory hold, that would have been just putting a lockbox at the bottom of the Mariana Trench somewhere, you know what I mean, if we didn't have, like, some semblance of a free and open internet. But so that has been encouraging. I just don't, you know, it's funny, man. It's so funny. And libertarians who are like super anti-Israel, who like take it past just being like, I'm anti all foreign aid. You know what I mean? Our government has no money. Our government is adding $1 trillion to the national debt every 100 days, just over every 3 months, over, you know, $4 trillion a year added to the national debt at our current spending rate. That's insane. But like the libertarians that that just like take it a step further and they just hate Israel, you know, it's like, guys, and this is the same mistake Democrats have made. That is not like, if you look at like lefty Twitter, you would think the opposite. But that is an extreme minority opinion. Mm-hmm. And like, you see the Biden administration like pandering to the Dearborn, Michigan crowd and the Hamas supporters on the campus of Columbia crowd. And it's like, guys, you're talking about like 20% or less of the country. Like, this is a very small voting block. And you see people on the right, like the, you know, like the Tucker Carlson people, like, you know, screw Israel, you know, when we have fentanyl in the United States, which kind of isn't like a coherent argument, but like,
yeah.
It's just like, that's not like whether, like, I'm not even giving an opinion here. I'm just saying, like, if you look at certain parts of Twitter, you are getting such a drastically, wildly different depiction of real life.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats are going to feel this one, man, endorsing these protests on college campuses, endorsing these people who are, a lot of them are foreign nationals. A lot of them don't go to these colleges. A lot of them are blatant terrorist sympathizers. It's like, brother, that is not. Like, that is just not, you know, when you see Tucker Carlson, like, Putin isn't that bad. It's like, guys, I'm as against the war in Ukraine. I'm as against funding Ukraine as it can be. I honestly don't care what happens to Ukraine. I mean, it is just not America's problem. God, but, like, Tucker Carlson doing, like, the Putin propaganda stuff, it's like, guys, Putin is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrible. Like, he's even worse than Zelensky, and Zelensky's terrible. So it's like, you're talking to this fringe sliver of the American electorate who just takes it way too far because they're mad at so-and-so from an unrelated reason or something like that. It's just like, but you're not talking to a majority. You're not talking about to a group of people that can swing even a state like Michigan. Like, Biden's going to win or lose Michigan based on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I live 5 minutes from the Michigan line. I've been to Dearborn. I'm in Detroit a lot. Trust me. Like, it's just not, like, 30,000 Muslims in Dearborn is just not going to swing the state of Michigan one way or the other. I'm sorry. So it's seeing people bend over backwards for these people, these degenerate terrorist supporters on college campuses. It's like, man, I don't even know how you can convince yourself that it's smart electorally.
Yeah, I think there's some very insidious people whispering in certain ears right now is all I'm going to say. I think there's a lot of money coming from various countries in the Middle East to support a lot of this. I think there's a lot of other interests being pushed. But I also think, to go kind of back on something you were saying, that I also think there's a lack of nuance from the right's reaction to this too. Because we're seeing, at the center of this is a debate over free speech that I think people are completely ignoring. And I get disappointed, for example, when someone like Greg Abbott, I think it's wonderful they're shutting down on violent so-called protests, on actual calls for violence. These things aren't protected by the First Amendment. But then he takes to Twitter and says something like, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, anti-Semitism will never be permitted on college campuses. It's like, okay, you're doing damage to the actual conservative position here, because anti-Semitism is a massively broad umbrella term that covers a whole range of different things. You're allowed to say you hate Jews. Like, I don't particularly care if you say you hate Jews. Like, I'd rather you didn't, but, you know, whatever, I don't care. I care if you say I want to kill Jews. Like, that's the key difference. And so I think there's a general lack of, I don't know, nuance and intellectual honesty and depth and all this kind of thing, because now you have a lot of people coming out and saying, like, oh, I will always stand with Israel. It's like, well, you should never always stand with anyone.
Always.
Like the Lindsey Graham thing of our support is as unconditional. It's like, all support should be conditional, especially when you talk about taxpayer funding. So I find just the lack of intellectual honesty throughout the issue very disappointing, because I think we should be agreeing that the line is violence. Inciting or calling for violence is the line. That is where I think the police should be getting involved. That is where people should be being arrested and facing consequences. You're allowed to say you hate Israel. You're allowed to say you hate Jews. You're not allowed to say you want to kill Jews or hurt Jews.
You're absolutely right about the lack of nuance on both sides of this, too. And it's funny, like the Fox News, like the super pro-Israel crowd on the right, they're way more aggressive than Israeli media.
Mm-hmm.
And it is weird, man. It is really weird. Like, you'll see, like, conservatives say stuff. They're like, well, all the Palestinians in Gaza, they support Hamas. Who cares? Fuck them. Carpet bomb the whole Gaza Strip. And it's like, if an Israeli journalist said that, they would be fired and driven out of polite society. Like, there's no Israel. Because I try to read, like, there's a war going on in Israel. I want to hear from people, you know, close by, on the ground. I'll read Aaron Bandler stuff over at Jewish Journal. He has, really good sources and stuff like that, too. And it's like, that's not how the Israelis are talking. You know what I mean? It's like this bizarre, like, one-track mind. You just, like, the Lindsey Graham have to take everything to the extreme. And it's like, mm-hmm. guys, like, who are you? Like, you're certainly not helping Israel. You know, just like these idiots in Colombia certainly aren't helping the Palestinians. It's like, my goodness, people.
Also, Israeli politics is an absolute shit show. It is so bizarre. Honestly, the constant threat of genocide is really the one thing that keeps Israelis together.
Funny because genocide, you know?
Yeah, it's quite the motivator. But if you remove that constant threat of being eradicated, their domestic politics world is an absolute mess. They have elections every 5 minutes. They're constantly suing each other for various things. There's really no point of agreement politically. You have people protesting each other. You have such a broad political spectrum for the most radical on one end to the most radical on the other. And it's only when radical Muslims surrounding them want to try and kill them all that a lot of that goes to the background, and then survival becomes the priority. It's just, if they actually wanted Israel to be in some way destroyed, they would have a better chance taking a step back for a couple of generations and letting them destroy themselves politically than just trying to launch these horrific terroristic attacks. But I don't know. It's just all
like the blind
support is a problem.
But Chuck Schumer, you know, the taking on Bibi Netanyahu and stuff. And it's just like, mm-hmm. I mean, that's obviously just performative for his own lefty voters in America and New York. But like, I mean, like, a lot of majority of Israelis hate Netanyahu. A lot of Israelis blame him for being unprepared for the attack on October 7th. And he was very unpopular and headed towards losing re-election before this happened. And he's almost certainly, I'd go so far to say, well, I don't know, the guy has 9 lives, but he's almost certainly gone as soon as this war is over. Like, he's going to be voted out. So it's just like, the lack of understanding anybody here has for anywhere else. I mean, we hear it too. We hear, you know, European pundits, you know, people in England and France, across, you know, Germany, talking about American politics. You're just like, all right, these people, what are you doing? Like, you have no idea what's going on here. Yeah. It's the same way. Like, American journalists talking about foreign policy, especially the Middle East, is just, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. These people have no idea what they're talking about. And they don't feel the need to inform themselves either, which is even worse.
I mean, really, the center of everything, whenever I speak to anyone about the Middle East, or really like the Muslim world more specifically, is that people do not understand that they simply do not look at things the way the West does. And this has been the big problem with, you know, the Barack Obama, John Kerry, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden approach to the Middle East, is they are constantly looking at it as if we share the same set of values, we share the same set of goals. We don't. And bribing someone into not declaring war against you might work in the West to some extent, but it doesn't work in that world. They do not live in the same world as us. They do not have the same values. They don't have the same attitude towards the value of life or the value of basic rights, anything like that. There's just this naivety that you see throughout journalism when it comes to the Middle East, as if Hamas, all they want is, oh, they love their kids just as much as we do. It's like, no, they don't. They don't. They do not love Palestinian children. They are willing to strap bombs to them. They are willing to fire rockets from within schools, and they want their own people to be killed. We are not dealing with the same kind of people. And unless people are willing to either say that or at least understand that, nothing is going to change, because we are just the naive children being taken advantage of time after time.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It is a childlike view of the world, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, people will get confused and angry when I'll say something about the wars in the Middle East and how it's bad and this is why, and either they'll say, oh, you're supporting terrorists, or somebody who supports terrorists will be like, I agree, and that's why, you know, something. I was like, no, I'm a grown man, I'm capable of nuance, one thing can be bad and another thing can also be bad. I saw Elon Musk tweeted a couple days ago, and this clip, it's been good. It goes around every now and again, anytime something flares up in the Middle East. But it was a clip from the foreign minister of the UAE, I think it was in 2020 or 2021, I forget, but it's a couple years old. He was educated in England. I don't know where he went to school, but he speaks perfect English, and he was doing a speech, and then he answered a question from a journalist. He said, well, I want to answer this in English, because it was a British journalist asking him a question. He says, you know, Europe is going to deal with a lot of Islamic terrorism because they do not understand the Middle East. They do not understand the people they've been letting in. And he goes on to say, basically, like, these people that Europe is letting in, they're the people we don't want here. They are criminals. They're terrorists. Like, they're not, like, productive members of our society. Like, they don't understand how radical Muslims think. They don't understand how terrorists think. And they're in for a world of hurt over the coming decades because they've let all these people in. And it's just like, yeah, man, the Egyptians know. The Jordanians know. Last time the Jordanians let in a couple hundred thousand Palestinians, they tried to overthrow the damn government. They kicked them all out and killed the rest. Okay, they killed like 50,000 Palestinians and kicked out, what was it, 200,000, 300,000 from Jordan? The Egyptians, last time they let in Palestinians, they started killing people too. Like, they're concerned with keeping the terror tunnels closed between Egypt and Gaza. That's all they care about. They don't want anything to do with these people because they understand what's going on the ground, and Americans do not, least of all American journalists and politicians.
It's just, it all comes back to the lie that is identity politics, doesn't it? Just brown good, white bad. I mean, let alone the fact that Israelis, I think the majority of them are not white. People always say go back to Poland. The majority of Israeli Jews, Israelis generally, but Israeli Jews are from the Middle East and North Africa and that area. So, you know, go back to Iraq. It's like, why aren't Jews in Iraq anymore? Good question. But it's just, it's all just so obvious how identity politics is just fundamentally wrong. It is not only bigoted, but it's just wrong. And people just keep doubling down on it. It doesn't matter how many times they're proved wrong. And until our society moves on from that, moves back to the idea that maybe things like race doesn't matter, but what you think and how you act matters, that we're only going to get worse and worse, because that's the reason why a lot of these squishy liberals on the coasts, they don't really care about the immigration, the illegal immigration stuff, because they truly see these people as they're just oppressed. They just want a better life. It's like, yeah, I'm sure a lot of them do, but a lot of them don't. And it has to get to your doorstep before people start caring about this, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one straw man after another either. Like, nobody, you know, takes the time. Like, I don't debate on this show, man, because debating's boring. I'd literally just lose my train of thought and zone out. Like, it's just not, you know what I mean? But it's like, if I'm going to, like, disagree with somebody, if I know there's going to be, like, a friendly debate or whatever, I just want to steel man the other person's argument. Like, I want to make sure I could argue their point better than they can. And nobody else does that. Some people do. I know you do that, Ian. But, you know, there's none of that. There's none of that. With, like, the big names in commentary and politics, there's none of that. Like, nobody actually understands each other anymore. Or even if they do, they lie about it because it's not what their audience wants to hear, you know? It's pathetic. It's pathetic.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because I've openly said before that I don't like debating. And people are, oh my God, you don't like debating? It's like, well, let me explain. The reason is what debates are a complete waste of time. What a debate should be is a long-form conversation over a series of weeks, if not months, where you have time to take someone's point, research it, educate yourself, and then come back with what you agree, what you disagree, what you think is wrong. The idea of debates now is you standing up and going toe-to-toe with someone where at least one of you, if not both, are not equipped to have that argument.
Right.
So what you do is you make up lies about the other person.
Usually both.
So it's either a commentator going up against a college student who is brave enough to stand up and ask a question and then humiliating them and making them regret ever having actually stood up and sharing a thought. And usually you're humiliating them by introducing some kind of straw man or making them dumb by asking them questions back. That's usually the trick. When you see a commentator go up against a college student and they ask a question, doesn't matter how ridiculous or stupid that question is, if the commentator responds with a question, they are on the back foot. They are trying to get out of it by making the other person seem stupid.
100%.
But even if you have two people who are, let's say you and I were debating something that we both know like a lot about. it would be hard for us to have a stand-up debate because you're going to say something that I'm not aware of or I don't truly understand. And hopefully I would say the same back. You need that time to go in, educate yourself. Debate in the sense of standing up next to each other is impossible. That is not a debate. That is a performance to try and make the other person seem like a bad person or a wrong person or a stupid person. That's all it is.
Well,
it's a waste of time.
There's a way to do it, but it has to be done in like a very organized structure. I mean, like I'm a fan of an Oxford style debate. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You have 2 hours, you have a month in advance to prepare. You know what I mean? You get to get to know your opponent's positions intimately and to steel man them. And you have hours of time. You have allotted time to speak. You don't talk over each other.
Yes.
You don't yell at each other. And you have equal numbers of people in the audience, pro, con, and undecided. And you poll them afterwards and you all shake hands and go home. Like, that's productive. And I've watched a lot of Oxford debates that are really good, even in the modern American politics. But, like, that's not what, like, people do on podcasts. You know
yeah,
what I mean? That's not what people do on cable news. It's not what people do on Twitter. It's just, like, a bunch of idiots who know nothing screaming at each other, making fools of themselves.
Well, it also matters very much who the moderator is. Because I know there was
right.
a big thing coming up about, you know, Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens having a debate on Israel, which would be, you know, hilarious, given Candace Owens is possibly the most ignorant person I have ever met in the world.
I would pay so much money to not watch that.
Just paid to ignore it. But yes. then you also saw a lot of people say, oh, maybe Tucker Carlson could moderate. It's like, okay. Tucker Carlson is, as I've said before, I think the most disappointing person in our movement because he's very intelligent but doesn't really care about what is true and what isn't. It's very important who you have as a moderator because they control the direction. They control what is and isn't true. They control what people get away with. And so that's often ignored completely. If you can have two people who are very intelligent, very informed, or not so much, to have a debate. But if you have the moderator doing what, say, NBC, CNN, all of these networks do, which is just twisting the direction, twisting the questions, twisting the topics, that makes a difference as well. It's very hard to actually find an objective, fair debate. I don't think they really exist too much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the people, American voters need to want more.
Mm-hmm.
They need to demand more from journalists, from commentators, from politicians. It's just, I don't know. Like the next decade is going to be very telling for a lot of reasons. I mean, we're looking at complete economic collapse in the next 10 years. There's a lot of things that could change the American way of life drastically for probably the worse, but potentially for the better
mm-hmm.
as well. We're dealing with AI, a lot of different, the economy is changing one way or the other. But it's just people are content with what they have. And if they weren't, they would demand better. You do see a lot of outlets, a lot of, you know, cable news, for instance, is kind of dying off. Their viewership is declining. A lot of these other, I mean, like a lot of new media, like a lot of these people are still crushing it
yeah.
as they're lying through their teeth and putting out nothing productive into the world. So it's just like, that is the market, man. Like, people are getting what they're demanding, unfortunately. And if you look at the right-wing media, you know, like you and I talk off-air a lot, too, about just, like, just kind of how, like, how a lot of these people are just a joke, you know what I mean? I'm not just talking about, like, Tucker Carlson specifically, but just a lot of these people are just, like, you know, they're not putting out anything interesting. Like, there's no original thought. There's no,
mm-hmm.
like, it's just, it's doing nothing for me. Not that you and I are anybody's target market. You know, it's always going to, like, you and I read a ton and think about these things way more than we should for our family's sakes, you know? So, like, and most people should not, you know, like, most people should not. I had a co-host of the show for the first year, and he was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't. Like, it's stressing me out. It's, like, impacting my mental health in a negative way. It's impacting my family. I can't know everything bad going on in the world on a daily basis. I just can't handle it. I was like, hey, I totally respect that. I totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I get that, like, Tucker Carlson's not trying to appeal to me, obviously. But like, there's just such little substance that I can even like sit through 5 minutes of without turning it off.
Yeah.
It's so few and far between, man. There's so few people who I feel are actually just providing something that'll make me think. And I've listened to very little libertarian I don't really listen to much political content anyway, but it's usually stuff I disagree with. It's not
mm-hmm.
like I'm not listening to like anarcho-capitalists talk about Ludwig von Mises, okay? Like, I'm a fan. I understand it. Big, you know, I'd rather talk to other people about why they should read Ludwig von Mises. You know what I mean? But, like, so I'm, but across the aisle, on the left, on, like, the conservative right, in the more, like, establishment on both sides, even on the libertarian side, the hard left side, there's just so few people putting out anything interesting right now. And I get that we're kind of in a lull in terms of, like, election season and stuff like that, but there's just... there's very little content at all that is compelling to me.
Well, I think ultimately it's what you said before, which is people do not want compelling content. They want quick, easy, bite-sized content on TikTok, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. Very short form, very feel good, and something that doesn't require you to actually think and question. That's a bad thing. I mean, that's a bad thing in education today. You should just accept the propaganda that's given to you and don't ask questions. I think until people become... I don't know how we achieve this, but until critical thinking and self-reflection and self-questioning comes back, where it's a good thing to hear something you disagree with, it's a good thing to talk to someone who is smarter than you and knows more about you and you disagree with. It'll force you to either change your mind or become better. But we don't live in that world, and we don't live in a world where people seek that out. That's why people react so angrily now on both sides of the aisle. It's more on the left, but people on the right do this too. If someone comes up that you disagree with, your first response is anger and rejection and shouting them down. That's indicative of a society that doesn't want to learn, doesn't want to listen, doesn't want to change, or even allow the possibility to change. And it's a very dangerous space to be in, because you look at in history where you have societies that embrace that way of thinking, bad stuff happens.
Yeah. And also, and we can end here. Yeah, I'm not a conservative, but like I hold some conservative beliefs, obviously. And I just want to speak to the conservative movement directly. It's, at the end of the day, man, conservatives have never gotten anything they wanted. Like, it's never happened. Like, Roe v. Wade was great. I celebrated that as much as the next guy. And then every state just voted for, like, unlimited abortion and amended their state constitutions to protect it. So it's like the border wide open, even though Trump was president for 4 years. All these wars, there's more wars now than there was before. I mean, it's just like... nothing. I mean, the economy's terrible. Things are unaffordable. Inflation's through the roof. We're still living in this degenerate culture that praises transgenderism and all this nonsense. It's like conservatives have never won anything. They've never conserved anything. So it's like the and well, you know, at least not in a long, long time. But like the politicians that have ever delivered something for you guys have been dead for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the commentators who are trying to steer the boat in the right direction have failed to do so. So you have two choices: do the exact same thing forever, or maybe reevaluate. And nobody's willing to reevaluate yet. Like, maybe after a few more election cycles of Republicans just getting punched in the dick over and over. I don't know. Like, how much is gonna how high does inflation have to be? 20%? 100%? Like what do we have to do? How many drag queen story hour shows do they have to happen at libraries? Every library? Yeah, like before you stop voting for Carrie Lake in primaries. It's just like what do you guys have to do before you stop listening to Steven Crowder over somebody who actually knows what they're talking about? You know what I mean? And it's just like, I get that, like, believing, you know, it's all stolen. It's none. It's never Trump's fault. It's never the right's fault. They did it to us. They cheated. It's like, I get that that's comforting, and you never have to, like, blame, look in the mirror and say, hey, maybe I fucked up. You know, I understand that. But maybe be an adult. Mm-hmm. Maybe look at your country. Are you satisfied with what's going on in the country? You've elected Republican majorities before. You've elected Republican presidents. You donate to your favorite commentator's Patreon. What's changed? Nothing? Okay, maybe it's time to reevaluate.
Well, it's also the ultimate thing of how do you measure success? And conservatives, under at least during the MAGA era, have not measured success by, you know, legislation change, policy change, to some extent economy change, but not enough so, because we completely ignored the impact of COVID and all the COVID policy that happened under Trump's watch. But it's just, it's really a mastery of complete genius. If you actually think about it in terms of how these politicians and how these commentators have done it, they've completely disconnected actual success from that collection of metrics you use to judge people. Mm-hmm. It's like a sports team somehow becoming more and more popular, no matter how many times they lose.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Because if you remove the one metric that matters, which is winning, and you convince people that you losing is nothing to do with you, it's all proof of the same conspiracy, and that's why you should double down, double down, double down, you will never, ever need to win. If anything, winning is bad.
Well, they make the same excuses for losing elections as they do for losing on policy.
Mm-hmm.
Like Speaker of the House Mike Johnson was endorsed by Trump. Trump backs him, says he backs him 100% and agrees with all of his policy proposals. Trump wanted the foreign aid bill to Taiwan and Ukraine and Israel and Gaza. Remember, we're funding both sides of the Gaza war, ladies and gentlemen. And Trump says, it's great. Yep, we need it. We need Ukraine funding. Love Mike Johnson. MAGA Mike Johnson. And people are mad at Mike Johnson and not Trump.
Yeah.
They're the same thing. They say, we want the exact same thing. They're like, we are the same person. They're like, we want the same things. Everyone's like, love Trump, hate Johnson. And Trump's like, no, you should love Mike Johnson. They're like, nope. No, I didn't hear it. No, I didn't. What? No. Oh, the Trump. Nope. He didn't say anything. No, hate Mike Johnson, love Trump. It's like, guys, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing? Like, you look like a fool. You look like a clown. You're being treated like a punk by an old man. Stop it. Stop it. Have some self-respect.
It's the ultimate trick, I think, in the world of what people think is accessible celebrity, in that everyone projects onto their favorite famous person what they want to be true. So people don't see what Trump is or isn't. You know, he's a lot of good things about him, a lot of bad things. He's a human being like everyone else. But everyone just sees what they want to see in him. They see what they want to see in his ridiculous bimbo of a lawyer. You know, she'll pop up on TV as, oh, she's so smart. Well, why is she smart? Like, oh, I don't know. She's just Trump's lawyer and she says things. So, well,
yeah, she's got real big smarts, you know.
Everyone sees nice... what they want to see. That's the most dangerous part.
Well, some things are easy to see with that woman. But, yeah, man. Yeah. It's people get what they want, man. People get what they want. Except for the listeners of this show. Like, I understand. I should just shut up and just tell the people what they want to hear for 6 months and just, like, make a bunch of money. But I just can't do it. I can't do it, Ian. I don't have it in me. I just wasn't built that way, man.
Well, it's the ultimate thing. Like, George Washington having power kind of forced upon him rather than wanting it. Always be very aware of the people who kind of openly want the money, want the fame, want the power. Because those people tend to be willing to do quite literally anything for it.
George Washington didn't brag about killing dogs to try to become president?
That tell-all book. I can't wait for it.
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing, man. It's amazing. And then you see the funny... I promise we won't hear. We're way over time. But it was a lot of people... Like, you did get, like, on Twitter. And if any of you guys aren't on Twitter, just ignore this because Twitter isn't real. But, like, you see... Like, it's such a team sport, red versus blue thing, you know? That, like, there's just tons... Like, you see all the Chrissy Noem stuff. All the comments are like, she did nothing wrong. And, like, and people that have no idea what, like, living in rural America is like or living on a farm. They're like, yeah, you know, hey, it's farm life. Sometimes you got to shoot a dog. And it's like...
In a gravel pit in front of a construction worker.
It's like, it's probably not even, like... You can't just, like, scare the shit out of random construction workers by... Also, you wouldn't shoot a dog with a shotgun.
No.
By the way, like, you wouldn't, like... If I'm coyote hunting, I'm not bringing a 12-gauge. Like, what do you, like...
Ensure suffering and fear as much as possible.
Like, you would want, like, honestly, you'd just shoot, like, honestly, if you had to put down a dog, you'd just shoot it in the brain with a .22, you know, quiet, for the construction workers' sakes, for goodness sake, you're not going to terrify your children. I don't know why I'm talking about how to kill a dog, but never killed a dog. But anyway, on its face, the story was ridiculous. But yeah, I like the George Washington model way better than the ambitions of people like Chrissy Noem trying to achieve power.
Pretty controversial there. You prefer George Washington to Chrissy Noem? You don't even love America, do you?
I do, my brother. I really do. I still do. Ian, my friend, where can everybody check out your show, which I highly recommend? Where can everybody subscribe to your Substack? Keep in touch with you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, as always. You can find all of my social medias at IGHAWORTH. You can find links to my columns for the Washington Examiner. I also, my syndicated column is starting next week, which is really exciting. So
yeah,
check
buddy.
That out. And then you can find links to my Substack and my YouTube. I've been really bad on my YouTube recently, so I'm going to try and start putting videos out again. You can find all of it on social media.
I mean, you got married like 2 weeks ago, so people can forgive the lack of content.
That's my excuse, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody follow Ian. He's great. That's all I got for today. I'm Brady Leonard. I'll be back on Wednesday. No gimmicks.